We take our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. We continue to hear dueling stories about the likely killing of a journalist after visiting the Saudi Arabian embassy in Turkey. President Trump's re-election campaign has raised a lot of money with 2 years still to go. And after the Republican tax overhaul went into effect, the federal deficit has jumped sharply in the last fiscal year. That's our question of the week. Is the size of the national debt and annual budget deficit something that bothers you? Does it motivate your vote? What do you think would be the best way to reduce it? Less spending on things like Medicare and Social Security or increased tax revenue? Do you think Congress will act in either direction? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. David Lauder is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Glad to be with you.
Well, on Monday, President Trump spoke about a conversation he had with King Salman of Saudi Arabia. Here's a bit of what he had to say to reporters.
I can only tell you that his denial to me was just one very, you know, relatively fast phone call, probably lasted 20 minutes. His denial to me could not have been stronger, that he had no knowledge, and it sounded like he and also the Crown Prince had no knowledge.
A lot has happened since then, David. The Turkish press, government-backed press in many cases, saying there are recordings of this journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, being murdered in the embassy. What's the latest on this in Washington and in Congress?
Well, as you said, the reports coming out of Turkey have been increasingly detailed and increasingly grisly about Khashoggi's disappearance and apparent murder. There has been mounting calls in Congress, including a number of Republican senators, Lindsey Graham being the most outspoken, but others as well, Marco Rubio, for example, saying that if this is true and suggesting that they think it is true, that the U.S. will have to punish Saudi Arabia in some form, saying that if the U.S. doesn't take a strong stand against this kind of killing, that America will lose its moral credibility to object to misbehavior by other countries. The administration doesn't seem to be taking that position. So there is a rift that's potentially developing here between the administration and Republicans in Congress over how to deal with this. At least so far, the president has talked about the Saudi denials. He says he gives them credence. Very few people on Capitol Hill seem to be sharing that position. So there potentially is a collision coming here, although right now, at least in Washington, both sides are somewhat distracted by the midterm election coming up.
You mentioned Senator Lindsey Graham. Let's give a listen to him talking about the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the effective ruler, it seems like, in Saudi Arabia. Here's a listen.
This all originated from the Crown Prince. I'm convinced of that. The president needs to be measured. I get that. But the world is watching us. They're not going to join Iran in Saudi Arabia. There are plenty of people in Saudi Arabia that we could have a good relationship with. But if the Crown Prince stays in power, it will be almost impossible to reconstruct this relationship at a time both of us need it.
So you mentioned very different approaches from senators, Republican senators like Lindsey Graham and the Republican president, Donald Trump. We have this long relationship the United States does with Saudi Arabia through better and worse. Is this something that is really going to flare up and cause tension between Senate Republicans and the president?
I think it could, yes. And again, you know, a lot could depend on how the midterm elections turn out, because that colors the entire environment in which these folks are operating. But you know, the Khashoggi is a someone who is very well known in Washington. A number of the senators had known him, had met him, had talked with him. So it's not an abstract thing in their minds. And, you know, the United States tends to not pay a whole lot of attention to atrocities that occur in other countries. But in this case, even though, as the president has said on a couple of occasions now, Khashoggi is not an American citizen, he was a resident of Virginia. He was someone who was quite well known in Washington. He was a columnist for the Washington Post. So there are a lot of people in Washington on both sides of the aisle for whom this is personal. And I don't think they're likely to easily drop it. And then you add to that the fact that people already had a lot of questions about the Crown Prince, about whether this new Saudi leadership was too reckless, too unwilling to listen to outsiders who were saying that they were doing the wrong thing in other situations, such as the war that's been going on between Saudi Arabia and its neighbor Yemen, in which thousands of civilians have been killed. So there were already have been these doubts about how reliable an ally is this guy. And this kind of action, in which, if the reports are accurate, they deliberately murdered an American resident journalist in a consulate because he was a dissident, that really, is the sort of thing that makes people think these aren't good people to be relying on.
Talking to David Lauder, Washington Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. It's our weekly review of the top stories in national politics. Moving on to the federal deficit. David, new numbers out on the deficit in the last fiscal year. People have been watching this closely since the Republican tax overhaul went into effect. What did we see happen to tax revenues and then the deficit this year?
Well, the deficit's gotten a lot worse. At the time the tax bill passed, Republicans said that it wouldn't add to the deficit, or if it did, it would be only a small amount and a temporary thing. That has proven to be untrue. The increase in the deficit is significant, and tax revenues actually went down for the first time in a number of years. The long-term outlook for the deficit is bad. It was going down year by year. Obviously, it reached a big peak right after the recession, as deficits typically go up. But from that point, it had been going steadily down and was on a glide path to end up at a fairly low and manageable level. But now that's been pretty dramatically turned around, and it's going up with no real end in sight.
Let's give a listen to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell talking about that deficit news this week.
It's very disturbing, and it's driven by the three big entitlement programs that are very popular: Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid. That's 70% of what we spend every year. The subject we were just discussing, the funding of the government, is about 30% of what we spend. There's been a bipartisan reluctance to tackle entitlement changes because of the popularity of those programs.
So Mitch McConnell saying it's the entitlements, it's those big programs. Is there any kind of appetite in Washington to tackle those?
No. I mean, President Trump has pretty much taken that off the table, as McConnell has said. But McConnell and other Republican leaders like to talk about the deficit in terms of spending too much. But Democrats would say, we're not really spending much more than we were spending. The problem that's driving the deficit now isn't that we're spending more, it's that we're bringing in less. So from the Democrats' standpoint, the problem isn't that Social Security and Medicare need to be cut, it's that taxes need to be increased on those who benefited from the tax cut. So the two sides frame this issue very, very differently. And the prospect for any kind of agreement between them right now is pretty remote.
Let's bring on a caller now. Kyle is with us in Dubuque, Iowa. Kyle, hello.
Hey, thanks for getting me on. I agree 100% with the tax cut. The Democrats go ahead and want to tax us to death. They don't want to stop their spending. I don't believe that Social Security is a welfare program. We paid into that for all our lives. I'm 50 years old, and this is the best job market I've ever seen. I think it's time to address the issues of the welfare programs for generations of people that refuse to work, and we keep giving them money. I'd like to see that put to an end. There's chances for jobs, and if you really want to work, we're here in Iowa. We got excellent job market. If you want a job, you can have a job.
Kyle, thanks a lot for the call. Kyle says tax cuts, good. Social Security, don't touch it. Wants some welfare reform, he says. How much of a difference? There are other philosophical issues with work and public assistance programs. How big a dent would that put in the deficit, though, David?
It would not put a significant dent in the deficit. As Senator McConnell said in that clip you played just a moment ago, 70% of what the government spends goes to Social Security, Medicare, and other spending on that primarily goes to senior citizens. So, you can, as many people do, you can argue that taxes shouldn't go up. That's fine. You can argue that Social Security shouldn't be cut. You can argue that the deficit is a bad thing. You can't really argue all three of those. You kind of have to take your pick. If you're going to cut the deficit, either the government will have to spend less money on Social Security and Medicare, or the government will have to raise taxes. There isn't an easy third choice that is going to get you out of the problem, because even if you zeroed out programs like food stamps, for example, the amount of money you saved would not be enough to deal with these mounting deficits. Medicaid is a very large program, but at this point, the bulk of money under Medicaid goes, again, to elderly Americans. It pays for a lot of nursing homes. It pays for other forms of care for elderly people. The amount of money in Medicaid that goes to younger people is now the minority part, most of those are children. So the amount of money going to working age people is a pretty small slice of the overall pie. So there's a dilemma here that by and large, both parties have done a pretty good job of not telling the truth to voters about the choice.
Talking to David Lauder from the Los Angeles Times, looking at some of the top national political news of the week. Still time for you to weigh in on 800-642-1234 on the deficit issue. Is this something you worry about? Does it affect how you vote? What solutions do you look for? More income? More taxes? Decreased spending? Just decrease spending on what then? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with David Lauder, Washington Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, talking about this week's political news. Want to hear a couple of your calls on these deficit and budget issues. Lori is with us in Vernon County. Lori, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. For the past, 50 years, 40 years, workers' wages have been stagnant. The wealthy have been becoming ever more wealthy. We are at the largest inequality in a century, practically. If workers had been receiving wages or wage increases in the last 50 years, the Social Security Fund would not be in trouble. We never talk about where the money has been going in these conversations. And also for McConnell to say that 70% of the budget goes to these entitlement programs, well, Social Security and Medicare are taken out of our paychecks. It's not coming out of the general fund. So thank you.
Lori, thanks for the call. I want to bring on Charlie in Milwaukee now. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I believe when we were discussing the tax cut that was proposed, they assumed a GDP of 3%. The fact that we are now getting a GDP of 4% and increased revenues in through taxation, isn't that going to mitigate the cost of the tax cut and decrease the deficit overall?
Charlie, thanks for the call. Before we move on from the deficit issue, David, Lori connected the economy to the deficit, saying workers not getting pay increases. That's been taking a bite out of Social Security money coming in. Charlie saying the hope that an improved economy brings in more revenue that's going to lower the deficit. Both arguments that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's true that by and large, the wages for average workers peaked in the late 1970s and have been pretty stagnant since. So that has definitely been a problem, and it has affected the Social Security financing. As for, you know, rapid economic growth, we haven't actually hit 4%, at least not on an annual basis, and most forecasts suggest that we'll be back to about 2% next year. So, you know, if the economy grows really, really fast, then everything financially gets much better. But you know, that's a bit like a family saying, you know, if I get a really big pay increase, I'll be able to afford this larger house. It's risky to bet on it.
Thanks a lot for your calls. We are talking about the top stories in national politics. David Lauder is with us. And David, I want to move on to a few more issues before our conversation ends. You wrote recently about the Senate, the U.S. Senate races in the midterm elections. Talk about the tough challenge for Democrats who are hoping to gain those magic two seats to gain a majority.
Yeah, I mean, most of the races that are up for grabs this year, there are 35 Senate seats up for grabs this year, but most of them are pretty one-sided. The ones that are actually competitive are mostly seats that Democrats hold in extremely conservative states or fairly conservative states. And they're not doing very well. So unlike the House, where Democrats have a really good chance of retaking the majority, in the Senate, Democrats maybe, possibly, if they get a lot of lucky breaks, might be able to win the majority. But more likely, they may actually lose a seat or two on balance. Because you're dealing with, you know, some pretty conservative places like West Virginia and North Dakota and Montana and Indiana and Missouri, where it's hard for a Democrat to win, and their chances of defending all of those incumbent Democratic senators in states that Trump carried, that's a tall order.
And I've seen a lot of lists, including yours, of races to watch that could flip. I'm not seeing a lot of people put Wisconsin. We've got incumbent Democrat Tammy Baldwin being challenged by Republican State Senator Leah Vukmir. Polls showing Baldwin ahead, but Donald Trump won the state. Ron Johnson won for Republicans for a second time in 2016. Wisconsin, though, doesn't seem to be on people's radars.
It doesn't. A year ago, Republican consultants were saying Tammy Baldwin's in trouble. This is a state that we should be able to win. You don't hear that very much from Republican strategists anymore. They're hoping that that they can hold on to, you know, that Governor Walker can hold on and get reelected, but it doesn't seem terribly likely that Baldwin is going to lose. And, you know, Wisconsin has probably the biggest ideological separation between its two senators of any state in the country. It's a remarkable thing how different Baldwin and Ron Johnson are. So the idea that the state could elect two such very different people in two successive elections is pretty startling. But that's the nature of the state.
Now, that election's 20 days away. I don't want to be that guy, but the presidential election is coming up in 2020. President Trump has a ways off. He's already had some impressive, what sound like impressive, fundraising numbers, over $100 million for that campaign. Is that something we usually see this far out?
No, Trump has definitely started fundraising earlier than other presidents have, and he's had quite a lot of success, as you noted. But, you know, raising money was never really going to be his problem. He's going to have the money that he needs to run. I think the question with Trump's reelection will be whether he can hold on to those voters in places like Wisconsin, who put him over the top. And I think that's very much an open question. You know, you have to assume if a guy won once that he can win twice. But that victory in 2016 was a very, very narrow win. You know, a few tens of thousands of votes in just a handful of states, including Wisconsin, would have flipped it the other way. So it's going to be a very closely fought contest again, I think. I mean, that it certainly, as it looks right now, things could change. But, you know, you'd have to bet on a another high-profile, high-decibel, lots of shouting, very polarized election.
We'll leave it there for now. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
That's David Lauder, Washington Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. He was with us for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. You can still weigh in on your question for you in this edition of The Week in Washington. Are you worried about the deficit, the federal deficit, gone up in a recent fiscal report? Are you worried about it? Do you vote based on that? What would you do to fix it? Let us know via Twitter. Tweet us at Central Time WPR with your thoughts.